Welcome to the Delling Pod with me, James Dellingpole. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but I'm so totally excited. It's Gregory Paul Martin. Gregory, I've only discovered you quite recently. You've sort of appeared, I imagine you have been around though, actually, without my being aware of it. You didn't just appear from the ether.
Well, the Twitter thing just started recently because I remembered that I actually had a Twitter account, and I decided that since I'm about to publish this very explosive book about the COVID thing, that it'd be a good idea to get talking about it. And also, I realized that people were really terrified, so they needed some kind of help. But I've been around a long time, but I haven't been very active on social media, so that's why you've just discovered me.
Well, I'm very happy that we've discovered each other. I mean, I listened to a few of your vidcasts or whatever they are, You said some really interesting things. I mean, pleasing things. I loved your episode on the evil stars which govern Chris Whitty. But before we go into that, you know, Chris Whitty was at school with me, by the way.
What a Malvern.
Yeah. So I keep saying this. Malvern was like a sort of Manichaean universe in which there was a good and evil. So we had Aleister Crowley went to Malvern briefly.
Oh my God!
We also had C.S. Lewis who went to Malvern again briefly. So and then my brother and I went there obviously, and so did Jonathan Miles Lee. So forces for good as well as forces for evil.
Whitty's not the same age.
Sorry. Whitty's not
the same age as you, right?
Yeah, he
did
is.
Did you know him then?
No, he was a non-entity, a complete non-entity. I mean,
he still is.
Yeah, he was just one of those. I mean, there were some Malvernians who shone, who were kind of just weren't interested in playing the game, but like a lot of sort of provincial public schools, Malvern was very good at training the sort of producing the solicitors and farmers of the future, people who sort of knuckle down into these, you know, into normie world. And then you got freaks like me and Jonathan and my brother. So I thought that Chris Whitty would fit into the kind of, you know, becoming a cog in the machine. What I wanted to ask you though, first of all, because you are an astrologer, are you not? Yeah,
it's not my, I have to say this, that it's my path with astrology has been, I guess, very unique because I was a child prodigy at it. The first chart I ever read was John Lennon's. I was 9 or 10 years old because my father produced the Beatles.
Yeah.
And I was very, I was very secretive about that and my psychic ability. It's because it was, it was frowned upon, my father and my mother wouldn't take it seriously. So I did that thing with John very secretly, but it's not my, I didn't make it my world, and I would never call myself just an astrologer because I'm a multi-hyphenate actor, writer, director, producer. I have my own production company in London. I played Hamlet. I've starred in a miniseries with Liam Neeson, Richard Burton, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, I've always had a very active, and I'm writing 5 novels right now. So I have a very active creative life, very active, and I've done everything. I've met fascinating people from Jimmy Stewart and Orson Welles and Marlon Brando to the Beatles and, God knows who. But I've had this other life, you see, and I've peeped certain people because this is thing that I happen to be really remarkably good at. That's why I do believe in reincarnation. And so I kept it very secret. Even I can remember very clearly when I was 27 in 1984 in New York, and my career was exploding. I was down to the last 3 for James Bond, et cetera, et cetera. And I had this one astrology teacher who was a genius like I am. And he, it was very private. And I made the mistake. I was invited to have lunch with the creator of Magnum PI because they wanted to, Universal Television wanted to create a series of me. I was under contract with them for a television series. And I made the mistake. We went to the 21 Club in New York, and I made the mistake of asking him his birth date and his birth time. And he said, why? And I said, because I've got this thing I do. It's called astrology. And I'd just be curious because, when you're doing career stuff, you can see compatibility and all that stuff. And he looked at me, I mean, he was an ex-Marine and an ex-advertising guy. So he looked at me like I just got out of a lunatic asylum. So like, you know, in the 80s, if you did yoga, you were a freak, believe it or not. So I am, I'm a master astrologer, but I've been very private about it until now.
Yeah. Well, so much has changed in our world and the world generally. Like, if I'd been doing this vidcast with you 2 years ago, it would have been basically about you talking about your experiences having a famous dad and all the kind of celebs you'd met and hung out with, and it would have been a series of anecdotes, etc. But that world doesn't interest me in the way that it used to. I think a lot of us have had a complete awakening in the last 18 months. I mean, some people were down the rabbit hole way before me. For me, it's been a fairly recent experience. But I think that if I'd heard your recent podcasts, you talking about astrology and evil planets and stuff, I'd have thought, this guy's a crank. This guy is talking absolute bollocks. And I wonder, actually, whether this has been part of, I think you'll agree, we have all been subject to the most massive cultural conditioning, where we've been trained to think in a particular way about all manner of subjects, and we think they're our own opinions, but they're not. They're the you could call it the Overton window, whatever. But the astrology, if you ask most people about astrology, they think it's a joke, that it doesn't work, that because they associate it with those, you know, a tall dark stranger.
Jonathan Kaner and the Daily Express.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, but you know, my astrology teacher, the only teacher I ever had, was man Neil Warner. He used to say to me, he was gay from America, he said, "Gregory, that's just entertainment." And he's absolutely right, it's entertainment. But what people don't understand, apart from, you know, the history of astrology going back to Babylon, and the profundity of great astrologers like Lilly, who was around in the Elizabethan time, and John Dee, who advised, you know, Queen Elizabeth I, was that Hitler and Churchill both employed astrologers in the Second World War for the right timing to launch offensives like D-Day. This is a fact. And I'm telling you right now, Rainer Fulmich, who is leading the class action lawsuit against Gates and the WHO for crimes against humanity, the second Nuremberg trials, I am his astrological advisor, because I'm telling him when in 22 to launch the lawsuit. And if he does, he will win. It is a strategic tool.
It's very
profound.
That's really interesting. I want to go back, because I'm really enjoying this. There's so many things I want to ask you. But tell me about, because your dad, George Martin, pretty much pucker down the line, traditional Englishman, wasn't he?
Very much so. Yeah.
So he would have really not been impressed by having a son into kind of weirdo esoteric.
I don't think he's impressed by having a son who was an actor, but he would have. I mean, I think he knew. It's funny, as he got older, he got more kind of curious about that esoteric stuff like that. But no, he was definitely very, I remember, being the psychic as a child too. The Beatles put a note on the end of Sergeant Pepper that was so high pitched. It was just for dogs, like a dog whistle.
Yeah.
And if, you know, it's actually right at the end after the gibberish talk that Paul and John do in a microphone, and I could hear it when I was 9 years old. And I told my dad, that's where it comes on. He says, "You can't, it's impossible. It's for dogs. Humans can't hear that." So, yeah, he was very, which is why when I did the John Lennon thing in the canteen at Abbey Road, you know, I was very nervous because I was a little boy. But, you know, I was very kind of hush hush about it. Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
So how did your psychic abilities first manifest themselves?
You know, if you talk to anybody who's had this stuff from childhood, it just is part of their reality. So you just, you know, you think you're a freak, right? So, you know, you think everyone else is completely different from you. And, you know, those days, I remember you're how old are you? 55?
50. I try not to count. I think I'm about 56. I was born in 65.
Okay, so you're 8 years younger than me. So this, you probably missed this, but in my, when I was like 9 or 10, Ouija boards was a big thing. Ouija board. This is before the
Exorcist. No, they were so, around. Yeah.
Everyone in my street had a Ouija board. It was a fun thing to do. So, you know, that was a sort of interesting experience because, I feel Ouija boards, which are basically seances in a box, I've got a very bad rap. But it's you know, that was an interesting exploration. But the things I'd know things before they would happen, that kind of thing. And I could hear, you know, certain things, like my connection with my pets was very strong. I could almost like hear them talking to me and that kind of thing. But these things, just these abilities just grow. And then in your life, you meet certain people. I mean, I this one man I met 20 years ago when I went through a very difficult experience in your country, where I come from, called Eddie Burks. And Eddie Burks was the chairman of the Royal Psychic Research Society and was unfortunately labeled the ghost hunter. And he was the man, he was a psychotherapist for ghosts. And he was the man who literally performed an exorcism, if you like, at Coutts Bank in the Strand in London, which is a very famous of the bank, it's Queen's Bank, but also a very famous case. Somebody leaked the story to the Daily Telegraph. And people like that have been in my life, my whole life. And they're fascinating people, you know? So, you know, it's just, I guess, answer your question, one just feels these things. You have to accept it's part of your ability as a human being. And in my opinion, it's also, I feel great artists are virtually psychic because they're tuning into the identity of another person.
Right. So you've got precognitive powers. You can foresee future events.
Me? Yeah. Asking about me?
Yeah.
Well, certain people. Yeah. I would say that as a child, I could feel when certain things were going to happen. And with regard to the COVID thing, I mean, the very moment this bullshit began, I smelt something that stank to high heaven. I knew something was terribly wrong. And people do have spirit guides. I know who my spirit guides are. And I heard from one of them. I was told exactly what was going to happen to me and what I should do. And I did it. And it was very difficult, this process I had to go through. But it was because I knew everything. I could see everything. I could see that, you know, I listened to your podcast with Mike Eden, and Mike Eden is writing the preface to my book, and he's a friend. And it was a very interesting podcast because that was a moment, I think, when you had to go down the rabbit hole for the first time. And, you know, I saw what he's talking about, the possibility of that, because it's just a possibility. See, that's what's really important to understand. It's not a fix. There is no fixed future. I saw the awful dark path that you described it as, that he's talking about from the word go, and it was horrifying. And so I kind of went through. So in that sense, yeah, I can see the future. Yeah, in that sense.
Yeah.
And of course, with astrology, you see in the chart the inevitable weather of the person. For example, you asked me about your own chart, and of course, I've looked at it only momentarily because I'm very, very busy, but. I first thing I noticed, what I wrote to you, you know, your character is exactly what the way I described it. And without question, in January, you are going to go into the two of the best career years of your life. You know, literally, it's going to be an incredible time for you in your career from January. That's inevitable. What you do with it is up to you. And that's where the mind comes in, you see. And most astrologers don't even understand that the human mind is, you're here to learn to be a master. So a great astrologer or even a not so great astrologer can probably see the weather ahead of you. Like the weather ahead for Boris Johnson is effing awful, and as it should be.
Yeah.
And that's inevitable. But in terms of seeing the future and feeling it, I just get hit sometimes of, like psychic hits, if you like.
Yeah. Now, I know another thing I was going to ask you before we move on. It seems quite complicated. I mean, how do you do it? It looks worryingly like maths to me, or complicated things involving alignments and stuff.
Is it complicated?
Yeah.
Extremely, yeah. I mean, if you're talking to somebody with, you know, almost a whole lifetime, I'm 64 years old of experience, you know, I mean, I began when I was 8. I remember the first, I only had one book. It was by a man called Alan Oaken. Because I just sort of somehow knew everything in my mind. This is why reincarnation is a reality. It is very complicated, but it sort of takes a look. Regard this as this way. I know you ride horses, don't you?
Yes. Okay. And I don't understand why. maybe you can answer that, because here's the weird thing, since you ask. Nobody in my family rides horses. There is no family connection at all. If anything, we sort of thought horsey people were, you know, ghastly or whatever. We didn't hunt or anything like that. I have had this horses. I love horses. I'm like obsessed with them. I love being on a horse. When I'm on a horse, I'm happy and I'm protected from, well, okay, well, I did have a bad hunting accident, but you know, I feel happy and like the forces of good are with me. And I can feel like I am almost communicating with horses. Well, what's that about? Is that a reincarnation thing or what?
Oh yeah. Well, it has to be any strong, really strong, a feeling experience. I mean, it has to be. What else can it possibly be? And here's the thing. I mean, look, it's very easy for people to actually tune into their past lives specifically by asking that question of themselves. I mean, one of the hardest things for people to get their head around is, you know, this whole quantum physics truth that time does not really exist. I mean, and Einstein was the thing that really drove him crazy. You know, I mean, the future, the past, and the present are all happening at the same time, literally. So when people say, but we're forced to perceive them linearly, otherwise we wouldn't grow, develop, evolve. But so when people say past lives, these lives are actually happening at the same time. They seem to be past life, if you like. So you share, to me, you share, if you really get quiet, and the hardest thing for people to do is still the mind, but if you really still your mind and just relax and ask yourself the question, where does this ability, this passion come from? You'll find out. I mean, and it's probably being that strong, it comes from many past lives.
Right. Yeah. Now, sorry, Karen.
When you think about the genius of people, right? So, I mean, you know, we don't need to talk about the horrible aspects of people, like, you know, the horrible blessings and curses of people like Boris Johnson and Bill Gates, but the you know, the incredible ability of this, you know, Stradivarius or Laurence Olivier or Marlon Brando, whatever, or the Beatles or my father or me or you, you know, they're all so unique. We're like snowflakes. Everybody's different. And these abilities just don't come out of nowhere. And these passions.
I agree with that. I was thinking particularly of Shakespeare. I mean, Shakespeare. Where did he come from?
Well, that, you know, that's a great question. And one of the things I'm doing, just so you're aware of, I'm actually in next year. I plan on performing a one man show in London about William Shakespeare. I'm one of those people who knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that Edward de Vere, the 17th Earl of Oxford, was Shakespeare.
Right.
And that this whole thing. And I'm doing a show that I've written about him as Shakespeare. But you're quite right. I mean, this man was, you know, the classic Renaissance man, this exceptional ability. And actually, that's one of the ways, since you brought Shakespeare up, to discover that align yourself with the truth, that it definitely had to have been that man. Because when you analyze the plays, what's in the plays, the knowledge, this obsession with kingship and the understanding of nobility, as well as the common man and the trips to Italy and all that stuff, you know, it has to have been him. It could not have been this man from Stratford who couldn't string two words together.
No, it's funny. I was at one of my friends at Oxford was a guy called Charles Vere, who was the heir to
He's head of the Vere,
the Dukedom of St. Albans, which he renounced. But he was very much he was very much, and obviously that it was his ancestor what wrote Shakespeare's plays. There's a line I often quote from Shakespeare when people sort of express doubts about, you know, demons or aliens or whatever. Mm. And I say, well, you know, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. I think that people like Shakespeare were sent to us as guides to explain our world for us. And I think that literature and art is full of these signposts and signifiers. If only we're there, we're alive to them.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And that's why, I guess, it's why I've written this book about COVID. And also, I think it's why it's very interesting, since you're talking about people like Shakespeare. Where are Where are the great British cultural voices speaking the truth, or great cultural voices of any bloody country speaking the truth right now? Where the heck are they? This is why Eric Clapton's a hero. I mean, this is very weird to me. It's very, very weird. And I've thought so much about, I mean, celebrities are one thing, right? So, I mean, George Clooney's not Shakespeare, obviously. So he's a charming actor. But even that aspect of it is really strange, because these people aren't, well, some of them are stupid, actually, but not all of them are stupid. You know, they must understand what's going on. Are they just cowards? I mean, what's going on here? Why is it just Eric Clapton and Van Morrison and Nicki Minaj? But also, more importantly, where's Tom Stoppard? Where's David Hare? Where are these people? David Hare wrote about a play about getting COVID that was banned by the BBC. But where are the great cultural voices standing up and saying, this is a lie?
Well,
where are our guides?
This is the question, isn't it? One thing that's happened to me, one of the many things that have happened to me in the last 18 months, is that I have lost my respect for almost everyone who formerly I had respect for. So pretty much the entirety of the media, all those kind of writers that I looked up to, you know, because they'd been doing what I do longer than me, and they had columns and stuff. They're worthless. I'm so much better than them, because I rose to the occasion. Yeah. I went over the top. They've been cowering in their dugouts at best. Yeah. Same. I have no respect for anyone in the entertainment industry, apart from a few exceptions like Ian Brown, Morrissey, Eric Clapton, as you say, Nicki Minaj. These are people that have enough money to be what you might call fuck off money. They are in a position where even if they had no career hereafter, they've got the cachet, they've got the houses, they've got the mortgages paid off. They can take a stand, and they haven't done so. So they're dead to me, these people. I mean, you must be feeling that as well.
No, completely. It's stunning to me. It's absolutely stunning. The cowardice, the moral cowardice and the stupidity. I mean, Bono, don't get me started. I mean, that thing with him with Bill Gates is just unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, and that's very strange. I mean, either, you know, the whole thing about they used to say Paul McCartney's dead, the Paul is dead thing.
Yeah.
The crazy story. With McCartney. It's almost like either Bono's killed dead and this is his evil doppelganger, or he's just an idiot. I mean, it's just incredible, that whole thing. And I'm so glad to hear you say that, because even though I have a British production company, I haven't lived there for a long time, but I've had a lot of experience of British journalism at its worst, I would say. And, you know, it's so great to hear somebody like you say what you just said, because where are the voices of dissent in the mainstream media, the voice of truth? Even I for a while I was listening to Talk Radio, your British show Talk Radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's supposed to be like edgy, right? Asking questions, those right. three principles. Right. But, you know, the moment anybody says anything on that show, like Mike Yeadon's banned from the show. I mean, anyone speaks anything vaguely resembling the truth, they go, oh, you're not talking about conspiracy theory now, are you?
Yeah.
I mean, this is really, really bad.
It is. Well, given that this is our, well, we are living through, if you listen to, are you familiar with Cliff High? Cliff High does brilliant sort of crazy woo podcast. He says that we are living through World War III. And that World War III is not a kinetic war yet; it's an information war, and it's a battle for the minds of our civilization. And most people are still not awake. And some people are making a conscious choice to. I think some of these people that we've named are probably or not named are sort of collaborators. It's a bit like, you know, they're in occupied France and they've decided that the Germans are going to win. So the best thing to do is to just make their peace with the regime and swallow their pride. And a lot of people, I think, are doing that. I think we've answered the question for a lot of people. How would they have behaved in the Second World War under occupation? Would they have been resistance or collaborators? And I think most people would have been collaborators. So that's that's a bit depressing. I've got to ask you, because since I've gone down the rabbit hole, and you must be familiar with this as well, there is a lot of paranoia, particularly people who've been down the rabbit hole for a long time. And, you know, some people will say, well, Gregory Paul Martin is controlled opposition because his dad was George Martin, and anyone involved in the entertainment industry is, you know, Tavistock Institute kind of mind control psyop. And we know that there is some truth in this thesis, because you've got people like Jim Morrison, his dad being the naval commander responsible for the Gulf of Tonkin incident. I think, am I right? There's all sorts of stuff that we... tell me about that a bit. Are you familiar with these theories?
Oh, yeah, of course. But I mean, that is paranoia. I mean, it's just, you have to have, you know, what Hemingway had, it's called a shockproof bullshit detector, don't you? I mean, you built in shockproof bullshit detector. I mean, you know, I can't stand, I always say to people, you know, actually, this is another reason why I didn't have the time, and I didn't want to go public about my extraordinary ability with astrology, was because I couldn't stand the world. And I had no respect for any astrologers, probably about, well, that's not true, three or four. I mean, like Liz Green, Robert Hahn, these are very profound astrologers. But most of them, they couldn't find their ass in a well-lit room, and they're doing it for the money, and they've learned it from books and in colleges, and they don't understand the way the universe works. They do not understand quantum physics. So that's a long way of saying I can't stand the new age woo-woo bullshit world, and there's a lot of craziness in it. I mean, the QAnon is nuts. I mean, the whole QAnon thing, this is crazy. So I understand, but this, again, there is truth, as you've just said, in there's truth somewhere. There's truth in all this craziness, like the Tavistock group, the whole thing, and you know the whole thing with the Bilderbergs and the CFR. I mean, there's definitely, you can, it's very out in the open now. I mean, the gloves are off. The devil stepped out from behind the curtain. You know, it's confusing people. But you know, and it's, I think one of the biggest things that people, this is why this book that will finally be published in your country, called The Biggest Lie, in January, I think now, is so important, is because nobody has yet made the connection between China and all of this. You know, I mean, it's so obvious to me, but you know, because basically what's happening is a takedown of Western civilization to enable China, definitely a part of this, enable them to impose their political system on the entire world. And that is why, in my opinion, Biden is trying to inject this poison into the arms of every single military member of the United States of America. Yeah. They want to walk in and take over the place. If you think the Chinese army are having this vaccine, you're very sadly mistaken. This is a huge thing. And it does have its roots. There are truths amongst the madness. I mean, there was a member of the Council of Foreign Relations who's gone on record years ago saying that there is a big group within the CFR whose entire intention is to destroy America. I mean, these people want to destroy America and the United Kingdom as sovereign nations. They want a global one world government. I mean, yes. Rockefeller Senior said it in his autobiography.
Yeah. You know? Yes. Well, you're familiar with a lot of this stuff, and you probably are aware of the theory that this goes back to at least Babylonian times, that there are these families which have families which essentially rule the world, are the real rulers of the world. And, you know, we've got presidents of the USA who are just really puppets. And how does that square with Communist China? I mean, Communist China is a newer phenomenon, but you've got these old families.
Well, sorry to interrupt you. Well, I mean, you know, George Soros has gone on record. I mean, this video footage has been actually saying that, you know, in order for the quote unquote new world order to succeed, it must include China. It must be China's thing. So I'm just setting aside the families for a minute, and just focusing on the members of the G20 and Bill Gates and Soros, people like that, and Jeff Bezos. I mean, the you know, this, look, it was so bleeding obvious to me living in Paris, as we do a lot of the time, which is such an incredible city, in the most artistic area of the entire city, the 6th arrondissement, to see it become suddenly overnight, a devastated, windswept, desert with like full of vagabonds and this beautiful cultural light of the world for no reason whatsoever, for a pathetic disease that has a global fatality rate of 0.15%, according to John Ioannidis of Stanford Research Institute. I mean, what the hell is it? It's obviously it's a trigger for the Great Reset. Yes. So, you have to get your head around that. And the thing is, the China thing is, in my mind, it's all theater. So this thing involves China. It's almost like, because when you examine the book, that awful, boring, turgid book, The Great Reset, and you listen to that awful man, Klaus Schwab, drone on about this, in stakeholder capitalism, and that we'll be happy owning nothing and having no privacy. I mean, it's like it is the Chinese capitalist current model, like, but transferred to the Western world.
Yes. Yes.
And it is. That's why it is the biggest conspiracy of all time. And that's why this book is so important. That's why it's called The Biggest Lie. And it's why it's so hard for people to get their heads around it. They've terrified people. We're living in terror. We were at the theater. I took my wife. I wanted her to see a Feydeau farce in Paris. We went to see a Feydeau farce at a great theater. And it was ridiculous, James. The entire audience was forced to sit through the entire performance with a bloody mask on. And the performers had no mask. And they were like 5 feet away. I mean, this is just madness, you know?
Yes, yes. I had a sort of opposite experience of that. I went to this pageant in the north of England, in the northeast, called Kinrin, which is it was financed by a sort of local boy made good. And it takes place on these former open cast coal mines, which have now been restored into a kind of sort of pastoral idyll with lakes and stuff. And they stage a history of England. And the cast, mark you, were all wearing masks. None of the audience were, but the cast were all wearing, and it completely ruins. You've got sort of Boadicea in her chariot with a mask. You've got Roman legionaries marching with masks. It was so bloody stupid. But what I don't get is why more people cannot see this insanity. It's like we've been put under a spell. Is that it?
Well, that's exactly what it is. I mean, it is exactly what it is. And, that's why it is the highest practice of the dark arts. What's going on is the highest practice of the dark arts on a mass level. It is incredible. That is exactly what it is. At the beginning of all this, there was an interview on Russian television, which I had the good fortune to find. It was on March the 15th last year.
I love that
interview. The interview was fascinating. But you know the one with Kvartsov?
Yes, with the high-level Russian special forces guy.
Yes.
But just tell us.
He completely nailed it. I mean, and he said, this you should view, it is, there is no such thing as a pandemic. It is a command and staff military exercise. It is an experiment that we are guinea pigs, we're lab rats, and it is a geopolitical exercise. That's exactly what it is. He said, there are three aims. One is depopulation, because there's too many of us. Two is to burst the credit bubble. And three is to, what was the third one he was talking about? The redistribution of wealth. I think that was it. But he said, he was talking about the depopulation as the satanic aspect of this. And the problem, it's such a shame that David Icke has been marginalized the way he's been marginalized, because he's also nailed it. And he's nailed it for years, it turns out. But when he says, when he talks about psychopaths, when he says that, no you wouldn't do that, because that's the thing. That's why it's the Hitler quote from Mein Kampf, the bigger the lie, the easier it is to pull off. David correctly says, you wouldn't do that. You, James, you wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that, but they would do that because they don't have any feelings,
I'm so glad you made that point, because I think it cannot be stated often enough. When I encounter people like Toby Young on our, we regularly have a ding dong on our London Calling podcast. Toby thinks that this isn't a conspiracy, because like conspiracy theories are just for wackos, tinfoil hatters, and it's just cock up, etc., etc. And when I try to explain what's going on to normies. The thing that they cannot understand is, why would they do this? And that's they can never get beyond that question, because they are trying to get into the heads of people who are not like them. If you are not a psychopath, you cannot understand the nature of the project. And if you're not in thrall to Satan, which, as you say, these people are, you can't really get a handle on what's going on.
Right. Well, again, and that's why that quote from Mein Kampf is so important. You know, he literally wrote, "The bigger the lie." He says exactly what we've just said, that, you know, the you know, ordinary people would never believe that it's possible for somebody to do something as awful as that, because they, even though ordinary people, quote unquote, ordinary people, the man in the street tells white lies all the time, like he tells his wife, "I'm sorry, I went down the pub when he's seeing his mistress," or whatever. You know, the idea that somebody could lie about what the contents of this injection, that, you know, and the idea that there's something in that or things in that that could be absolutely horrifying, and you know, it's just like, it's beyond them, even though they've lost the capacity to question, why is the goal to vaccinate the entire population, as stated by Gates, for something that has a 0.15 fatality rate? I mean, that alone should be like a bloody red flag. What about the fact that when you open up the vaccine, it's all redacted? Nobody's told what's in it. I mean, this is extraordinary stuff. So that's why, you know, you and I have this problem, this with the frustration with people. And of course, when I was asked to write this book, it was commissioned by the president of the European Vaccine Vigilance Forum. So there's a whole network of people. Like, I'm very close to Reiner Formick, Bobby Kennedy Jr., et cetera, et cetera. And I said to Jean-Pierre Houdier, this man who asked me to write the book, I said, look, obviously, we're going to be called conspiracy theorists. So the first thing we have to do is address it in the book. So I wrote a chapter called Conspiracy Theory, Conspiracy Facts, in which I delineate the entire history of conspiracies in the history of humanity, going back beyond the murder of Julius Caesar, the conspiracy to assassinate Caesar. And the fact of the matter is, when you look at it historically, conspiracies have run history. I mean, they've literally run history.
Yeah.
I mean, right up to the present day. And what we don't understand is, it is true that the phrase conspiracy theory was weaponized in 1964 by Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA, who actually was one of the people who masterminded the conspiracy to assassinate Kennedy. That's where it comes from. That was when it first began to be used as a term of ridicule. Before that, it was an accepted idea, because conspiracies are real. And now it's like, oh, he's a conspiracy. You know, I mean, it's so easy. It's so easy. But conspiracies have run history.
Yes.
They're endemic to the human condition. Even in companies, look, a conspiracy can be in a restaurant where, like, three guys want to, like, knife the owner in the back, metaphorically speaking. You know what I mean? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is that we can understand this on several levels, can't we? We can understand it as a case of the greed and sort of the Malthusianism of an elite which despises ordinary people and is more than happy to see them eradicated or turned into slaves, you know, the useless eaters. But there is another level. There's a higher level of understanding, which is that this is ultimately a battle between good and evil. This is all been foretold in the Bible. Where are you on that? I mean, I noticed that you mentioned God in your podcast, but are you actually a Christian, or are you a deist, or what?
I wouldn't use any kind of word to describe me as I unquestionably believe in God. And I suppose, but Christian, the traditional sense. I mean, I was raised, you and I had a very similar upbringing. I went to St. Albans School, you know, where Stephen Hawking went, and then went to RADA. But it was the same kind of upbringing. But I had a very normal middle-class upbringing, despite the fact my father was Sir George Martin. So I was a choir boy in a Church of England, and I loved it. In fact, I contemplated becoming a priest for a long time in the Church of England. So I've always had, my mother was Church of Scotland, very, very spiritual woman. And so I was always very spiritual, if you like. But there's no question to me that this is the ultimate, this is the literally the apocalypse. And that's why I speak about it all the time. We held a vigil on Sunday on Twitter Actually, no, we'd on a Zoom call, 100 people, which was a vigil for Archangel Michael and the Heavenly Host, because this is what's going on. I mean, this is the ultimate battle. And these people are possessed. They are absolutely possessed.
Yeah.
There is no question about it. And, you know, if you, I often quote, and I quote in the book, because this aspect of it is critical for people to understand. And, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. Just look at Chris Whitty's eyes. Just look at what's going on with Dan Andrews in Victoria. Any of them. I mean, these people are really possessed. It's a fact. And I often quote, there's a very famous quote from the German mystic Rudolf Steiner, the founder of the Waldorf schools. He was a psychic and a clairvoyant since childhood. He was a Renaissance man, brilliant architect, and a fantastic philosopher. And he gave a series of lectures 104 years ago, James, in 1917. And I quote it in the book. I quote a passage of these 14 lectures in the book. In these lectures, which were called the Descent of the Spirits of Darkness, he had a vision of in the future this vaccine being developed. He called it a vaccine being developed, which they will use to get into children. And this is one of the most actually heinous aspect of the whole thing, because children are completely, they're nothing. They, you know, it's ridiculous, the idea of sticking these. They will find a way to get this substance into the arms of children, and this substance will destroy the wish and desire within children to follow the spiritual path. So they will see the world as totally materialistic. And he said that the drive to do this to the children, again, this is in 1917, he's saying this, the drive would come from the spirits of darkness within the people involved. That's why I talked about the dark stars in the charts of Schwab, Gates, Johnson, blah, blah, blah. These people are demonically possessed.
Yes. No, absolutely. And I've noticed it takes two forms. Those photographs of Chris Whitty, where his eyes are just like blank, dark.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that certain people have the eyes of a goat? It's like looking at a goat's eyes, not human eyes. This stuff is real and all around us.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'm so glad you raised the point about, you know, God and the spiritual aspect of it, and asked the question about me. And I'm sure we and I are actually in the same place, because the biggest problem we have is we're so disconnected from the world of spirit. I mean, you know, I was shocked to find out when I've dug into writing this book, because we live part of the world time in Paris, that the French people, they really just kind of frown on the idea of spirituality. It's sort of different in England. It's certainly different in America, where people like are interested in naturopathic foods and astrology. And, you know, there's kind of like, but here it's almost like, even though everyone goes to church on Sunday, because the Catholic Church pay lip service to God and the concept of the divine and the Holy Spirit, you know, it's like basically no, but we don't in our real life. No, it doesn't play any part at all. And the fact of the matter is, when you have the head of the Roman Catholic Church and the Dalai Lama pushing this death shot on people, obviously something is rotten in the state of Denmark.
Yes. Well, of course, this is a problem that a lot of people have with Christianity at the moment. They associate it with the churches, and when you've got figureheads like Justin Welby claiming that if you don't believe in climate change, it's actually worse than Holocaust denial. I mean, you know that these people have lost all touch with reality. The Pope, as you say, pushing the jab. And I think it's very important to distinguish between the word of God as expressed in the Bible and the teachings of Jesus, and the wrong direction that so many churchmen have gone in.
You've got the governor of the replacement governor of New York, you know, actually saying it's literally you're doing Jesus's work if you take the vaccine. Jesus would have taken the vaccine. If you understand who Jesus was, I mean, this is magic to Jesus. I mean, you know, the magic in black magic. I mean, like pills, you know, injections and all that stuff. It's nothing to do with the Christ message whatsoever.
Yes.
Because the Christ message was simply, we are masters, you know, for goodness sake, you know, he didn't need a vaccine to walk on water. You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting that when you I've been doing a bit of reading of the words of Jesus in that red print you get in the red letter Bibles, and he just emerges as this amazingly cool character. I can't believe what I've been missing all these. I mean, you know, like you, I have one of those educations where I went to chapel every day of the week and twice on Sundays. That was the deal. So this stuff is, as a cultural Christian, I've been there for years, but. The thing that turned me, actually, because I'm saying this partly for the benefit, there are going to be some Christians watching this who will be going, why are you talking to an astrologer? Astrology is not Christian. The Bible, St. Augustine practiced astrology that he later may have renounced it. But the point is that it ain't as simple as that, I think.
No, and not only that, but you can stick this one in their pipes and they can smoke it. You know, the three wise kings were astrologers. That's in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
They found him through a star, you know? They found him through a star. I mean, it's ridiculous, but you can't please all the people all the time, can you?
No, I think we're all finding our way. And I think that I don't judge people whether they're Christians or not, whether they're Muslims or Hindus or whatever. I think we're all trying to make sense of what's going on. But have you listened to either of my Jonathan Miles Lee podcasts?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So Jonathan was really the guy who turned me on my path towards proper Christianity, in that Jonathan was a bit like you. He was not, not a straightforward down the line Christian. Jonathan had psychic powers, and when he was at school, this evil entity tried to pull down his sheets and whispered in his ear, where is the snake? And he protected himself by finding a copy of the New Testament and keeping it by his bed. He had a direct connection with this stuff. And what Jonathan made me realize is that this stuff is not just a sort of cultural thing that we've been taught to follow over the years as a way of controlling us and making us be good. It's actually real. God is real. The devil is real. Angels are real, and demons are real.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think the people who don't understand, I look at some Christians and I think, you don't really get it. You think you know what the deal is, but actually, unless you absolutely understand that God is real and he is your savior, that he sent his only son to save you, and that this stuff was not made up, then you're not really getting it.
Completely. And the truth is that the world, the human experience in the world, is much far more magical and mysterious, far more magical, richer than we can possibly imagine. I mean, I've had so much experience of that. I mean, I've seen ghosts. I've had firsthand experience of my friend Eddie Burks, the man I mentioned, who they named the ghost hunter, performing his work, his great work of service in releasing a trapped spirit. I've released trapped spirits myself. And it's the world of the fairy king, the David kingdom, they're absolutely real. And this is one of the reasons why, in my opinion, they're doing what they're doing, because these people are ultra materialists. And one of the biggest problems is people, you see, I wanted to speak to you about this. You would understand this because you've brushed up. You went to school with Chris Whitty. You, at Oxford, you would have inevitably rubbed shoulders with certain people.
Yeah, totally.
You know, who are like, right. So, you know, I've met Jeffrey Epstein. I've met Bill Gates, you know, all this stuff. I've slept in a house owned by the Rothschilds. I know. And the problem is that, you know, the man in the street doesn't understand the mentality of these people. And, you know, when they can't get their heads around the fact that when you make more than $5,000 a second, $5,000, or let's put it this way, 4,000, 3,000, 4,000 pounds every second of your life, what that can do to your soul. I'm talking about Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, and Elon Musk. That's the amount of money these people make. What was it? What do you, you know, what does it do to you? You know, what's it going to do to you? It is the classic thing. I mean, there was a study done many years ago at Stanford University. They used the Monopoly, students playing Monopoly. And, you know, the paper that came out of the study was called the Arsehole Effect, because they discovered the person who was given the they they gave one of the players like a head start in terms of winning the game. And, you know, it was a game, right? But they were videotaping the game in a locked room. And this extraordinary thing happened because the guy who started to win, once he started to win and, like, you know, take everything and take all the property, he became a total jerk, a total asshole, even though he was a student and he was playing against his best mate. Yeah. And, you know, you've got to understand, you've been around these people, and I'm talking about the Rothschilds or, you know, whatever the family business is and the family money, the Johnsons and Johnsons and all of this world.
Yeah.
They have a different way of looking at life because they don't have problems with money. And they think that we are literally the little people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We are useless.
And we are dispensable. And there's too many of us. There's just too many of us now.
Yes, yes, exactly. Now, I wonder whether you can help me answer. Actually, you won't be able to answer this question because it's impossible. But there are different theories. Well, because it's worth discussing, because a lot of people ask about this. There are different theories on whether these people are sort of pre-selected and groomed from a very early age. Like, was Boris Johnson always destined for this sort of meat puppet role as a kind of useful idiot of the globalist elite? Or was he forged by circumstances? And as you say, I was with a lot of these people at Oxford. You know, I mean, I was there with Gove, although I knew him, I got to befriend him afterwards. I was friends with Boris, I was friends with Dave Cameron. And it never struck me at the time that these people were agents of Satan or whatever. They just struck me as just kind of fairly ambitious undergraduates who just wanted to, you know, get a blue, say, for playing tennis, like I think David Cameron probably did, or to become president of the union, like Boris did, or whatever. It seems to me that they've been seduced into the dark path rather than that they were created that way. But maybe you've got a different, or maybe you'd argue that they were destined to be who they are.
Well, okay, so like character is destiny, and you know, in that sense, you definitely have in the chart, you can see the potential for the highest development and the lowest development. And the problem with these people is they've taken the lowest path. I actually agree with you. And I think when we're talking about the satanic aspect of this,
yeah,
I think the number of people who are sort of at that level of it is very, very, very small. Very small. I think most people are, I think there's a lot of bribery around it. There's a lot of bribery around, a lot of money, money, money. You know, I mean, but the people were involved in the, you know, it's not like the G20, they're off doing a satanic ritual every night after they've had, you know what I mean? You know, but so I agree with you, but you know, money, look, are you telling me if you were, well, you wouldn't do it because you're James Dellingpole, but I can guarantee you someone like Boris Johnson, if somebody offered him $1 billion just to play along with this scenario, when's that man going to make $1 billion in his life?
That's very true. No, that way. I think it's important to define what you mean by satanic, because obviously not everyone is going to adrenochrome parties and sacrificing children to Satan. That's kind of a niche of the upper echelons of whatever. But I think more generally, if we understand that the world is the realm of the Prince of Lies, it's the devil, it's kind of it's our testing ground, and we get to choose free will, whether or not we choose the, and this is what something that Lawrence Fox's dad, James Fox, explained to me. And I think it's one of the most insightful things I've ever heard. He's a Christian. And right. He said that, I asked him about whether he'd come across kind of satanic practice in his time when, you know, when he was making performance with Mick Jagger and so on, when he was at a high level in the movie industry. And he said, it's not the entertainment industry. It is the world. It is the nature of the world. And you think about this, and you think about we leave school and we've been sold this fantasy that it's, if we just work hard and keep our noses clean and, you know, get a mortgage, we'll have a happy, secure life and a nice retirement and stuff. And actually what this misses out is the detail that most of the ways that we are given to make money involve moral compromises of one sort or another. And that is the nature of the problem. So if you're in politics and you want to get on, you've got to very quickly overcome your principles and do whatever your party says, or in the case of Boris Johnson's government, doing what the World Economic Forum and the Council on Foreign Relations and all these supranational bodies that really control the world. You've got to take your orders. And if you do that, you're going to get a place like George Osborne did on Deripaska's yacht, and you're going to be a made man, aren't
absolutely
you?
Absolutely right.
That's the
absolutely right. I mean, absolutely right. You're unquestionably right, 100%.
And I don't know. So okay. So going back to that astrological thing, and I'm sorry for any Christians there who are saying you shouldn't be asking questions about astrology. I'm saying, look, okay, I'm a sinner. I'm flawed. I'm curious. I know the deal you're supposed to do is to just totally trust in God and he'll take care of it. And I can see that's good for a lot of people, but I unfortunately happen to have been born with this curiosity, which is why I'm a journalist. I want to know stuff. I want to fathom out, I want to suss out the world. What was I going to ask you? Yeah. So we are governed to a degree by the alignment of the stars at our birth. Is that the deal?
Okay, so the most profound level, astrology, is the highest form of psychology. That's why Carl Gustav Jung, the founder of analytical psychology with Freud, he studied astrology. He was a master astrologer and tarot cards and used them with his patients. I mean, tarot cards are extraordinary. The chart at the most deepest level has every single thing in it about you from past lives. And it describes your what I call the stripes you have earned, the spiritual stripes you have earned from former incarnations, and the challenges you've set yourselves in this self yourself in this lifetime to either overcome or let them overcome you. And it's fascinating. It's a fascinating fact that nobody, not one single person, I've studied charts for thousands and thousands and thousands of charts. I mean, about Mick Jagger to you know, the Dalai Lama to, you know, Mahatma Gandhi and JFK. Nobody who's achieved anything of significance does not have these challenges to overcome. As an experiment, I once did the chart of a homeless woman I was helping in Los Angeles, and she had no challenges in her chart. She had nothing to make her grow. She was fundamentally lazy and wanted to be taken care of. That's a fact. So the chart is a map of your soul. That's why I always say to people, before you begin, can we talk about everything? That way you'll get the most out of it, because I know everything about you. You are psychologically naked before me. It's that brilliant. That's exactly what it is. But the problem is this. You just said something very significant. You said the attitude of a classic Christian is like, you know, I'll just sit back and God will take care of everything for me. That is not the way the world of humanity works. And now the devil has stepped out behind the curtain. And if you don't take action, that's why I keep saying to people, the irony of this experience, it is the greatest opportunity to achieve spiritual mastery you'll ever be given. Because if you don't step up to the plate and own how powerful you are now and start dominating your mind and making conscious choices and pushing back more than just demonstrating in the streets, because that ain't going to do nothing. These people are psychopaths. They don't care what you do. If you don't, you will be living in that totalitarian hell that Mike Eden's talking about. It's true Christianity. What Christ was teaching is power. It's actually individual power. And it's not power over other people. It's mastery. It's, you know, it's literally learning how to become a master. You determine the future. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but it's, you know, it's astrology is a tool for self-understanding. And I was actually speaking to a woman who I'd agreed to read her chart this morning just before we spoke. And she was fortunately one of the few people I ever meet or read who actually is happy. And she was just fascinated to speak to me because she was waiting to speak to someone like you all my life. So I told her, you know, what's in the chart? And in her chart, she's having this massive spiritual awakening. She's an incredible humanitarian. She's a great artist who's forgotten that she's a great artist. And, you know, she needs guidance right now because she's awakening to her spirit guides. Everybody has spirit guides. You know, if you need to actually when it's time for you to hear the messages to coming that want to come through from them, you need to learn how to relax and access that information. And by the way, speaking of that and speaking of angels, there's a tremendous drive from the other side. The veil is very thin right now to get through to people, to wake them up, you know, and make them realize that this is not just, this is the battleground. This is the thing described in the Bible. This is it, folks.
Yes.
And, you know, but Jesus says at one point in the Bible, I need your hands and your voice and your feet. I mean, he needs us. They need us to get awake and not just be zombies walking around with masks and allowing themselves to inject poison into our arms.
Yes. I've spoken or heard from two people in the last 6 months who've seen angels and absolutely convinced, you know, that and they weren't kind of on drugs at the time or anything. You know, they weren't the kind of people who expected ever in their life to see an angel, and yet they did.
Right.
Which is
right.
I'm sure the same goes with demons. I mean, they are.
Yeah, well, the thing about that is when David Icke is talking about the lizard people and all that stuff, he's actually referring, I think, more to this. You know, if you really go into the idea of demonic spirits and demons is in every culture, every tradition. I mean, it's in Islam, it's in Christianity, it's into the Judaic tradition. And there are these things they talk about called in the past called archons, archons.
Yeah.
They're little demonic entities. And, you know, they're, if essentially you think of it this way, there is a sort of a vast spirit world around us. And there are spirits of light and there are spirits of darkness. And the battle is going, this is the final battle going on right now. So they're highly active, these little devils, so to speak. And it's very easy for them to get into the minds and hearts of people like Johnson and people like Dan Andrews and people like Klaus Schwab, because they're so open to it, because it's the power trip, isn't it? I mean, it's the money thing. It's the thing like, hey, I'm cool, you know, and it is the devil seducing you by money, you know, and that's why the story in the Bible of the temptation in the desert is so powerful, because you realize that man, in order to become the first Christ, which we're all supposed to become, had to have his fight with the devil, had to be tempted. And what's happened is these people have succumbed. I mean, they simply succumbed to the demonic tendencies within their psyche, so to speak, so which means that there is some sort of little demon things going on inside them, which is what you see in Witty's eyes, you know.
Well, totally. Yes. No, that scene in the Bible where the devil takes Jesus up to a high place and shows him the world. And I'm kind of thinking I'm totally with Jesus on this one. I would have just gone, yeah, whatever, you know, just take it, you know, have it if you want. I'm not interested. You know, even if you offered me a huge, you know, the thing I always wanted was a vast country estate with my own hunt attached, and you know, my stables and servants and servant girls and stuff. I mean, I don't think I would even do it for that anymore. What was the name of the evil star that Witty was born under?
Oh, I can't remember. There's so many of them. It was, I don't know. I can't tell you off the
top. It had an Arab name, I think.
Well, yes. No. Most of them have Arab names, because it is actually Arabic astrology. It goes back to before the time of Christ. It was probably Ras al Haig or something like that. Or
doesn't matter. It's irrelevant for the purpose of the discussion. Well, what I really wanted to ask you was. So I listened to a couple of your disquisitions on the terrible future awaiting Boris Johnson and Chris Whitty and so on. And obviously it's very comforting, because I think a lot of us are feeling helpless right now. A lot of us are feeling that, you know, we're looking at Australia and we're thinking they are actually cancelling the bank accounts and taking away the social security and whatever of people who won't take the death jab. They are building so-called quarantine camps, which look like concentration camps to me. People are looking at this is coming our way anytime soon, and people are feeling helpless. So when they listen to you talking about how don't worry, the bad guys are going to get their comeuppance, it's very, very seductive. But it could be argued that this stuff is just hopium. It's just like what we want to hear. So tell me, how sure can you be that? Well, first of all, are we going to win?
Of course, we've already won. we've already won. You know, and the, you know, of course, you can call, you can say, oh, he's just a, we just called hopium. But this goes back to this fundamental misunderstanding. Look, James, we're in the middle of a second Renaissance right now. And what people forget is in, you know, the first Renaissance, you know, when Galileo was in prison for saying things like I'm saying, or the equivalent of them. I mean, you know, because what I'm saying is what quantum physics has proven, that we live in a multiverse of infinite parallel worlds with infinite probable futures. The reason that one of the main reasons that they know this is the most evil thing they're doing, they're telling you, these people, these psychopaths, there is only one future. It's our future. We're telling you what it is. Either you accept it or you're dead, basically. That's what they're saying to you. That is a total scientific lie. There is, and there is no fixed future in astrology and anything else. There instead, there are infinite possibilities ahead of us at all times. When we make a decision, whatever decision that is, and particularly when we follow a different belief, we change the reality that we are in. All realities are explored. This is quantum physics, okay? So what people have to understand, this is as big a dramatic an insight as when Galileo said, no, you know, the Earth actually revolves around the sun. I mean, that's why they locked him up. You know, it took hundreds of years for this to filter down into mass consciousness. It is the second Renaissance. And people forget that in the first Renaissance, there are all kinds of atrocities going on, wars, as well as all the great stuff, the art, you know. So that's why this is a pivotal moment. It's much bigger. So people have to understand this, this fundamental fact that we actually, the world, the universe is way different than we've been led to believe. It's totally free. This is a free will zone. And the what I'm saying, we've already won. In my reality, you're damn right we've already won, because I understand the power of my mind. Yeah. And I know that if I can convince as many people as I can possibly reach to follow the path that I'm following, they will be taken down. Listen, in their charts, that's inevitable. Just look, because in order to transcend what people call karma, which is written in the chart, you have to stay, you have to grow spiritually. You have to have a come to Jesus moment. Otherwise, the fate will just like bash you around like a tennis ball. You'll feel like lucky one moment, tragic the next. That's inevitable. But if you learn to transcend the energy in the chart, which is what I teach people, right, then the chart doesn't rule you, you rule the chart. Jesus had an astrology chart. Do you think a man who walks on water and turned water into wine actually was ruled by his chart? No. So you see, it's what I'm saying to people is, these people like, this is why it's so fascinating. Studying the charts of psychopaths is fascinating. So because for a psychopath, because they're not learning any spiritual lessons, they're spiritual Neanderthals, what is in the chart will happen. Johnson will go down in April. In my opinion, it's going to be a very messy end with him. Very messy end indeed. I mean, because there's so much darkness there. And this is also true of all these other people, the Pope included, the Pope for sure. And there's something going on, I think, with the Pope today or yesterday. It's very significant. But so that reality is for sure going to happen. What I'm saying is, you have to take control of your mind and understand that you are not some spectator here. You are actually a key player in the evolution of mankind. And that if you respond to the call for your spiritual evolution that this nightmare situation is pushing you towards, then yeah, for sure, they've already lost, because you've aligned yourself with the forces of light. You've aligned yourself with Archangel Michael. You've actually given your heart and soul to the battle against evil. You are part of, you've been conscripted. When that guy said to you, we're in a war, damn right. I've written, it's actually a fifth generational war. We have all been conscripted into a war. And the fascinating thing about all this is, again, speaking about Mike Eden, Dr. Peter McCulloch, Rainer Fulmich, every single one of us who are involved in this fight and are fighting on the behalf of the entire human race never wanted to be part of it. I'm sure you didn't want to be either. Why would you want to be talking about this stuff? We want to be having fun, don't we?
Oh, totally. Look, I really wanted my life to be, I thought that I'd make a reasonable amount of money so that enable me to, you know, I don't want money to buy me material things. I want money as a fuck off money to free me from the needs to kiss butt or whatever, you know, to people I don't respect. I think a lot of people want that. And I wanted to retire somewhere nice and sunny and maybe able to do more hunting and that doesn't quite work with the nice and sunny bit, but you get the idea. And instead, here I find myself fighting in the midst of World War III, which is a spiritual battle as much as a sort of temporal battle. And I'm thinking, what? I mean, I'm feeling a bit like sort of Joan of Arc or something. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the same, but I am feeling like I've been called to
have been.
Well, but okay. So those of us who have been called, I mean, I do every day. I ask God, you know, to help me, guide me, you know, and to lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. It's, you know, I learn the Psalms because I want to become like a medieval monk, you know, imbued with the Holy Spirit so that it helps me make the right decisions. But how do we, I mean, is everyone on our side going to get this tap on the shoulder? Or how do we reach out to people that, you know, how do we give people their come to Jesus moment without being preaching?
Well, you're doing it in the way the only way you know how. I'm doing it the only way I know how. I mean, again, that's all you can do, isn't it? But, you know, you have to, please. I mean, humility is actually realizing that you are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. We are all the light of the world. That's humility. That's some arrogance. Everything's upside down in this world. Joe Blow is the light of the world. The moment we've given the whole game away to psychopaths who are demonically possessed and they're just intent on destroying the entire concept of Western civilization. That's what's happening here, right? So you just do what you can do. And what you've just described, the first thing you do in the morning is the most holy thing you can possibly do. I take my hat off to having the humility to ask Jesus, ask the good Lord, the Holy Spirit to say, how can I help today? What can I do? That's all you can do. But it's important to realize that, you know, there are forces way more powerful than us who are on, you know, the forces of light, i.e. Michael and the heavenly host. If you think that we're going to be abandoned, that means you really have zero faith and you're totally fucked. I mean, that's it. What's the point? You might as well just drive your car off the cliff. I mean, and again, I think one of the key things I keep telling people is to stop obsessing about, you know, the worst case scenario. You have to stay in joy. You have to laugh, play your favorite music, eat great food, drink great wine, go out horse riding. It's really key because that is the essence of life, is just joy, you know? And if you do that, and if you do whatever you can, which again, is why I started giving those Twitter things on Twitter and writing what I've been writing and writing this monster of a book, which is going to be extremely incendiary, believe me, because, you know, you have to call a spade. And that's what I do in the book with all of them. You know, that's all we can do, right? And then do what, you know, again, continue doing what you and I do otherwise. But you're a writer, you know, a political commentator. By the way, I really love the piece on global warming you wrote on your blog. I think it's so fantastic because it is part of the hoax. I mean, Greta Thunberg is a total construct, you know. Don't worry. So you have to trust that by answering that question of the Holy Spirit every morning and being listening, you have to listen, obviously, and then doing what you're doing it right now, having this conversation with me.
Yes, yes.
That's all we can do.
But have you been through times in your life where you've had to battle when you've had serious kind of good and evil struggles?
You have no idea.
Oh, really?
I really. I mean, look, one of my guides you will know a lot of I have a lot of guides, and one of the guides is a very, you would know him because his name, everybody would know who he is. And he said, I got the message from him at the beginning of this, that this is, you know, this is deeply personal for you. And I'm talking about the demonic aspect of it. He says, you know, just know this is deeply, deeply personal for you. So, and you're going to hear about a lot of this because I'm publishing a memoir of my life, you know, growing up as in the sort of privileged position, I suppose you would say. It's called Isn't It a Pity? And in the George Harrison song. And I'm going to publish it next year. And I'm going to talk about this because, you know, I wouldn't be who I was if I hadn't had to have terrible, tremendous fights in my life with the dark side. And believe me, it began at a very early age with me. So that's a very good question, and it's true. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I've come close to suicide on three occasions when a time when I was critically ill and I thought I'd never recover. So I'm walking evidence that miracles happen, if you like. So yeah, that's true. I think in order to become a very strong spiritual person, you have to have gone through the fire.
Yes.
I mean, you've been critically ill too. I know that.
I've had enough bad shit happen to me to have been tested. I can't say that, you know, for about my 10 years from my 40s, from about the age of 40, things went pretty tits up in a number of ways, you know, the Lyme disease and you know, financial stuff. And yeah, I think it's looking back, I think that this stuff is meant to test you. It's meant to forge your character and to make you a better person. And that's part of the deal.
I wouldn't be the person. No, it's absolutely. I would not be half the man I am today had I not been through horrific battles with literally I think one of the most demonic human beings we could ever possibly meet, protracted over years, plus, you know, this medical things like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Can you actually see demons? Have you seen?
I've been in an experience of somebody who was Eddie. I'm talking about Eddie Burks, was actually performing the exorcism is the wrong word. It's actually like guiding a trapped spirit, a poltergeist, to freedom. I haven't seen anything in that regard with my eyes, but I've certainly dealt with a absolute incarnate evil. I'm talking about a very black magic person, a person who practices at a very high level. That aspect of it. But there's a light side to this too. I mean, I'll tell you a very funny quick story. I wonder, you know, the castle seat of Edward de Vere is in Castle Headingham in Essex, the real Shakespeare. And I used to spend a lot of time there. And I had a friend who owned a really small pub it was originally 16th century cottages that were all together as a pub now. And there were four rooms above the actual pub, you know, with like sloping floors and all that stuff. It's just a really like a village pub. And the owner became a very good friend of mine. And I brought down a very psychic friend of mine from Lincoln to see what he would pick up on the castle grounds. And he was a brilliant young man. There are only four rooms, I said. And I put my friend Martin in room number four was at the end. He went up and put his bags in there. And I was ordering a couple of pints from the owner, Mike. And he came down. He was beaming with happiness. And he said, "There's somebody in my room." He said, "There's some Gregory. There's somebody in my room. And he's a lovely chap. He looks like the Laughing Cavalier. He's got this big flowery hat on and this big velvet suit. And he just is so happy to see me." And you see, there are spirits that stay on earth that don't want to leave because they've had such a good time. And this was one of them. And it's so funny because I said to my friend Mike, I said, "Mike, do you know you've got a ghost in this pub?" And he said, "Oh, what? Is he in room number four?" That's what he said. Because other people had reported feeling things. I mean, this stuff is this sort of experience to me has always been fascinating. I was once in a hotel in Lincoln with the same young man. It's like a big hotel in the center of Lincoln, right by the cathedral, where a lot of businessmen have coffee in the morning in the lounge. We were sitting there having coffee in the lounge one day, and Martin was next to me, and he's talking to me. And suddenly he gets distracted, and he says, "There's somebody here. There's a woman here, a spirit. She wants my attention because she can see my light, and she wants my help. Spirits who are trapped, ghosts, are just, they're trapped, but they don't know why they're here, the ones that don't want to be here. So when they see someone like him, his light was so big, they knew he could help him." And he said, "I'm going to tell her, I'll talk to her later." So he just did that. And he started talking to me again. And I said, "Wait a minute." "I'm going to go and find out about the ghosts in this hotel." And I walked to the reception. I said, "Do you have any ghosts in this hotel?" And the young woman brought out a sheet of paper that had 20 names on it. And right at the top, Martin had said that this woman was she looked like a 19th century cleaning woman. She had like a mop, white mops on her head, like a mop top hat, this white, and a long black skirt. And the top of the list was mop girl, 19th century mop girl who'd committed suicide in the hotel and was trapped. You know, this stuff is, it's there's a and that's not funny, but the first story is funny. It's just it's fascinating and charming, that side of the spirit world, the occult world.
Yeah, well, do you know, this is some of my old guard following are going to be looking at this.
Yeah, what the hell are you doing? Talking to a
nutcase? What was that about? What are you talking about?
Oh, the Breitbart guy. What are you doing?
Oh, I know. But you know, I really don't care. I'm interested in what is, not what is acceptable to agree on, which are different things. I mean, there's this weird, crazy stuff in this world that people have been.
It's magical too, Jen. That's the thing. It's magical. I mean, look, and you look at your life. Look, where did your children come from? They didn't just come, from your DNA. You know, it's a magical. They have a spirit. They have their unique personalities. Where does that come from?
Yes, they were sent to test me, I think.
Yeah,
I very much get that vibe. Do you think, by the way, I've got this theory that the forces of darkness, although they seem very scary, actually they're quite weak because they can only operate with our permission.
Totally. And that's why, look, I'm telling you right now, as I discuss with my wife, Cherie, all the time, they are terrified. And there's a tiny core of them. And it's really true. What we're allowing to happen right now is this tiny core of really fucked up human beings who with completely a demonic connection to dominate the entire world and actually do the bidding of these spirits. We're talking, they're doing the bidding of the spirits. The spirits are telling them, do this, do that. And they go, yeah, I'll do that one. This is fun. It is literally like, I'll give you the whole world. But they're actually terrified. They're terrified because if we do wake up collectively, which we have to do, and take back the power, and I personally think it's going to come to insurrection. I don't think it'll be any other way possible. You know, it's going to have to be get to that point. They're going to be running for their bunkers in a hot New York second. I mean, it's pathetic, really. It's really pathetic. That's why when you look at, I was looking at the G20 thing this morning, you know. I mean, it's so, these people are so pathetic. They're all of them. They're like pond life, human beings. I mean, it's amazing what we've done to ourselves by allowing this to happen. And it's also important to realize, you know, that this has been in the planning for decades. It's been in the planning for decades. It's very, very clear. And like Gates is the golden boy, because Gates is the one who's come up with the whole thing of how to change the software of human beings by injecting the spike protein into the bodies under the pretext of this ridiculous non-pandemic. I mean, it's just brilliant what they got away with when you think about it, but it hasn't worked the way it's working. The fact that we have so many people wake up, we have many more people waking up than people realize, because they're not telling us about the number of people waking up. You see, that this is terrifying them. And it's important to realize that the concept of doing what they're doing, as I just said, it's not playing out the way they've intended it to play out. It's not happening the way. So the moment the pushback really comes, that's why they're going so extreme right now, particularly, like, for example, in Canada. And as you mentioned, in Australia with that crazy man, Dan, whatever his name is. This is like really drastic behavior. I mean, think about it. 4 months ago, it was like, here, have an ice cream or a burger and you in return for getting vaccinated. I mean, that was like, that one, that doesn't work. Now it's like, you take it or else, you know, you lose your job. Enough people have to wake up to realize this is desperate. This is the act of desperation. When that happens, when it reaches a critical mass, and again, that's why I've written this book, that's my contribution, and it'll be published all over the world, then they will go. I mean, what I see in Johnson's chart is a lynching. And I'm saying that word, lynching. I'm not saying it should happen. I don't believe in that. But I believe, looking at his chart, I can see that happening. I can see a crowd in Downing Street, like the French Revolution, dragging him out into the street. That's how crazy I can see people becoming with this thing. Again, I'm not advocating that. No. I'm not saying it should happen. But I'm saying that in his chart, that kind of thing is that's in his chart. And yes. I think it does have to get to that point, you know?
Well, it cannot not because the situation is so dire and the political class are not going to solve this. This can only come from the people. And much as one might wish it otherwise, I don't see how it can end other than an insurrection.
Yeah, and again, so somebody might say to you or to me, as they did the other day, how do you marry what you've just talked about, what we're talking about, with love and Christianity? And I just, that's why I emphasize, I'm not saying this should happen. Yeah. I'm not encouraging it, but I can see that reality very strongly in Johnson's chart. And I said to her, look, and she said, well, look, I get the fact that we got to get really angry because people have to get really, they have to realize they're murdering children right now. And believe me, the research I've done, it's horrifying what you're not being told. It's horrifying. Women weeping because the day after the kid took the shot, he's dead. He's a perfectly healthy. I mean, this is just one tiny instance. The numbers of dead is way bigger than we're being told. They're murdering people. They're murdering children. So we have to get angry. And she said, well, I get that, but shouldn't we get angry and feel love? And I said, wait a minute. It's one thing to feel forgiveness on the spiritual level. On the spiritual level, everything is forgivable. Of course. I mean, everything, even Hitler's forgivable, right? I mean, who wants to carry that shit around, right? But on the material, we live in a material world. And I said, are you really telling me that if you walked into your living room, and not James, like if you walked into your living room and you found a psychopath had broken in and had a knife out and was about to rip out the heart of your child, would you feel love or rage?
It wouldn't be love.
Because that's what's happening.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what's happening. That's what's happening. So
before we go,
Karen. Well, I was just going to say this one thing that, again, I think protests are really important. But the fact of the matter is, these people, their hubris is so enormous, their sickness is so massive. They just look at it on the television and go, oh, we'll just send in more thuggish police. And, you know, that's not going to do anything. So that's why I believe it does have to get to that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And at some point, the army and the police are going to have to come onto our side.
I agree. So, well, all shall be well and all manner of things shall be well in the end.
Yeah, just that's holding that vision is very important.
Yeah, well, let's keep that. I've got to ask you before we go, because if I don't, people will go, why didn't he ask that one? When you gave the reading to John Lennon, did it include his death?
Somebody else asked me that. No, because I was 9 or 10. You know, I hardly was aware of, you know, I mean, I knew when you're really good at something, right? You know, as a kid, you just know it, right? You just know it. So obviously it was a really strange subject for a child to be really good at. So I was aware of what?
I say, or what? I mean, the idea of a 9-year-old preparing astrological charts is
But when you think about it, like Jimmy Greaves, I mean, he could like do a good dribble at 9 years old. I mean, it's just a gift, it's just an ability, you know. So I was learning. So I was using I had a very unique opportunity, like obviously being around the Beatles at so young age, but I was nervous about it, obviously, because my father poo-pooed it. But I know that John and George were very curious about it. But, you know, astrology was becoming very interesting to people at that point. So I was learning through doing I've learned through doing every reading I've done, learn more and more and more. So I wasn't aware, although you can see someone's death in the chart. I've never looked at it because I'm not interested in seeing it, but I can do that. At that point, I couldn't, and I wasn't interested. What I could see, however, was Yoko Ono. And, of course, I didn't know that it was Yoko Ono, but I could see, I knew enough to know that John had a very heavy karma with women, you know, and his whole thing with his mother and all that stuff. And, you know, it is fascinating that at the end of his life, he was calling Yoko mother. And, you know, the whole facade of the end of his life was total facade at the end of his life. It's nothing to do with what people think was going on. But at that moment, what I saw was a very dark feminine, the experience of a very dark feminine force coming into his life that were, and of course, I didn't articulate it this way, but this is the way I was like figuring out my mind. So I said something to the effect of there's something, you know, there's some strong feminine woman, not feminine, probably a word I used, like a mother energy coming into your life that's related to the death of your mother. I realized that was Yoko because she was so controlling, you know.
And what did he consult you any more after that? I mean, did it ring true to him what you said? No.
No. Well, he was kind of shocked when I told him about the death of his mother. I did say your mother died when you were X years old, because I could see that. Now, he went sort of pale when I said that. But no, because John was a dilettante. I mean, John had a very short attention span, and he was the most spiritual man within the Beatles was George Harrison, beyond a shadow of a doubt. But John was like, you know, I mean, John hated recording and he had no attention. You know, he'd just come into the studio and say to my father or Jeff Emmerich, the Beatles engineer, give me the sound of a flower exploding, that kind of thing. You know, I mean, he'd dabble in this stuff. And Yoko did too. Yoko was an amateur witch. I mean, she'd hire people and think that she could, you know, do magic and so forth. But they were very much like, they were dilettantes. So no, it didn't go any further than that.
Well, we could talk for hours, but it's my lunchtime, and I'll get a crash if I'm not careful.
You gotta go now,
Gregory.
Hunting and shooting.
So just tell people where they can find you, buy your stuff, discover more.
So I have a Twitter account which is called at Watch It Come Down. Watch It Come Down. Watch It Come Down is the title of a book I published predicting what was going to happen to America before this happened 2 years ago. It's on Amazon. But the Twitter account is at Watch It Come Down. I had two websites. One is gregorypaulmartin.com. That's about my film and television and theater work. And then I have another website, which is about this, which is called nothingistruerthantruth.com. Nothingistruerthantruth.com. So that's how people can contact me. Thank you for asking.
No, and I'm really looking forward to reading your two books next year.
Yeah. I will send you, James, I'll send you a PDF of the English version just so you can review it.
Yeah.
And give me, I can say, James Bellingbowl says. But also, you live in South London, right?
No, I used to live in South London. I now live in the country. I live in Northamptonshire.
So when I'm in England. Okay, great. Well, when we come to England, we'd love you to meet you and have a pint.
That would be great. I mean, I reckon there's going to be a lockdown before long, I fear. Right. Well, I know. Yeah. I mean, there just is, because it's how they roll. Mm-hmm. It's got nothing to do with health. It's everything to do with the crushing of the economy, the crushing of, you know, the introduction of central bank digital currencies and so on. We can't let them get
Remember, you know, there is no fixed future. I understand what you're saying. I'm not saying be pie in the sky. It's all going to be lovely. But while there's a very high probability of that, you know, it's very important to keep your mind on a different future. Just keep your mind on a different future where, and that's why I made this all these predictions about these guys. It's not going to go on forever. And you don't know. I mean, you do know, but what you believe about the future is the most important thing.
Right.
It's really true. Somebody contacted me yesterday on Twitter asking me about protocols of people who've taken the vaccine are having problems, because I know a doctor in Florida who can really help them with that. And I put on my website, Nothing Is Truer Than Truth, under the blog, his protocols for if you're having problems, which you're bound to have if you've taken that thing. Then he told me, I haven't taken it. I just want to know from the future, because I think I'm going to have to take it. And I'm worried that England's going to go the same way as Australia. And I said, that is the biggest mistake you could possibly make in your entire life. You're doing exactly what they want you to do. They are owning, you've given them ownership of your mind. Now you're afraid of this and the fear is going to make it happen. That is absolutely true. So I'm telling you, keep it stronger on the positive side. It's not necessarily going to be that. And if it is, believe me, it will not last beyond April.
Great.
Because after April, it's all over.
That's really good to hear. And now I'll take that tip on board. Yeah, think positively. Think of the future that we want to create. That's good.
Thank you.
Anyone who's enjoyed this podcast, which is of course everyone, may I gently remind you that I really appreciate your support on Patreon or Subscribestar I've got a website, dellingpolworld.com, where you can get your special friend badges. You can also give me Bitcoin. I like Bitcoin. I like cryptos. They're good. Make me happy. Support me. I need your help. And I appreciate it when you give it to me. Gregory, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been everything I hoped and more. And we'll meet up and do more shit soon. Okay.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.